Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
The fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had the sheep.
Well, he didn't have the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
Welcome along. It's another edition of the Football Family here on The 42 with me, Gavin Cooney, joined as ever by David Snaid. Morning, Dave. And Shane Keegan is here as well. Morning, Shane.
How are you keeping, Gav?
I'm all good.
Gav, can I start slightly off topic? I've just drove back from the school run and I was listening to the news talk, 9 o'clock news, as I was driving back. They informed me that Rebecca Vardy and Colleen Rooney go to court today. It officially starts today. But I just thought it was absolutely fantastic. They told me that Colleen's month-long sting earned her the nickname Wagatha Christie.
Yeah, it's outstanding.
I thought that was superb.
Yeah, it's absolutely outstanding. Did News Talk throw in some talk about how terrible cyclists are on the road? That's their go-to topic. Anytime I turn News Talk on in the morning, they're giving out about cyclists. And I'm not a cyclist, but I feel I should defend their honour here.
Should we not also be referring to Shane as News Talks? Shane, as
well? Sorry, I shouldn't be insulting your colleagues like that, Shane. Sorry.
I'm a man of the people. I'm not bound to any one organisation.
It's not the same. Listen, you're preaching to the choir. Although it's funny because I was following some of the details of that Wagatha Christie case, and it's amazing how some of Rebecca Barry's phones ended up in the North Sea. It's fucking mad.
Do you get in touch with us if your phone has not recently taken a dip in the North Sea and is working? You can get in touch with us, join the WhatsApp group, or you can email Gavin Cooney at the42.ie. You can find me on Twitter at gcooney93 as well. Right, we'll start with some League of Ireland. Stephen Bradley is staying. Are we surprised?
Yeah, very surprised. I thought the opportunity would be too much for him to say no to. I listened to some of his interviews around it. I thought he spoke really well on the topic. I think the amazing thing for me is that, and don't get me wrong, like, you know, by no stretch of the imagination am I saying that any manager managing the League of Ireland should grab any opportunity that comes up to go to England. I'm not saying that at all, right? And Stephen is in a position of strength, so it had to be the right opportunity if he was going to go. What amazes me is when he speaks about the opportunity, he talks as if he actually believes it was the right opportunity. He talks about what a great club they were and the setup and their aspirations and the people that are involved behind the scenes and all of that kind of thing, and has nothing but praise for it. So I don't think he's turned it down because he doesn't feel it's the right move. I think he's turned it down because he's just so enthused about the project
with Bradley. Again, I did think it was going to happen from speaking to people, but then I got a phone call just about something totally different from a different player from an agent in England. And he would deal more so around kind of lower leagues and stuff. And the conversation turned to Bradley and Lincoln and what was happening. And he said he was dead right because Lincoln have like nearly essentially halved their budget. And that was an issue that one of the reasons why maybe Appleton had left as well. And I think a couple of important players for the club have left over the previous transfer windows, which tends to be their business model anyway. But it was something that was said to me that actually like the things would be a bit tighter. So that might have been something that played into it. I don't know for certain, but it was just curious that it would be randomly someone who wouldn't have been close to that situation in terms of following what was happening knew what was going on at the club anyway. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that probably vindicates his decision to stay a little bit, and also vindicating his decision to stay are consecutive 3-1 wins at home, and now they're top of the league, Dave, and they're looking slightly ominous for the rest of us.
Yeah, I remember Shane asked me a couple of weeks ago, or I think it was last week, about weaknesses and where the weaknesses would be. And what I did, the only thing I did notice last night was they were very, like, Sligo, if Sligo had a final ball and they could have been in 2 or 3 times, they really could have, in terms of the counter. But also, I thought it was obviously interesting the fact that he made 7 changes from the win the other night, and then they just looked totally disjointed. But I wasn't expecting them to be as disjointed as they were, because like, Gary O'Neill was still in there, but he was one of the lads who got hooked at half time. And it was quite telling. I was trying to look at it in terms of how Sligo kind of set up. Like, they did play very, very narrow in the midfield, kind of had a pretty much a back four. But as soon as Manus had the ball, or any of the Rovers defenders had the ball, there was 4 pushed right up. So you had Hamilton, Mata, Keo, and McDonald would have been the one from midfield, who basically pushed right up almost as 4 strikers to stop obviously the defence playing out, and they were kind of taking that risk of seeing if they got kind of, if a ball went over the top, but nothing went over them at all. The defence pushed right up as well, but it was just genuinely, like, there was a couple of times where Liam Buckley got very frustrated, but there was times down on either flank where if the final ball had just been a bit better or taken a bit more care with it, they could have been in. Like, there was one time they pretty much had a simple throw down the line. Bulger played it to McDonald. McDonald fed it in, but Mata just didn't time his run well, and he would have been through on goal. So they're still, like, as I said, they're still not perfect. Like, you can, like, a team like Derry, you could see, who have quality, you could see them hurting them. It's just whether or not, obviously, but they won't be making anywhere near as many changes, or they'll have their proper team out because they just lacked a fair bit of energy or a fair bit of nous up front last night as well, up until the second half when Rory Gaffney, Bourke got the goal, so Rory Gaffney changed the game. He was superb.
Yeah, I just saw the highlights of it there. I didn't see as much of it as you did, but it appears that, yeah, they basically rolled out a 4-4-2 diamond against Rovers about 10 days ago, obviously, and they got the 1-1 draw. So I think they rocked up with the 4-4-2 diamond again, which obviously did quite well for one half. But Rory Gaffney seems to have turned the game in its head, in fairness.
I had no idea he was that fast. Like, it's the sprint for the second goal. And also, and I'll be honest, it was only last season, like, his touch, he is a very, very, very good footballer in terms of the little touches he makes and the decisions he makes, one touches and all the rest of it. Like, I had him down as a bit more, just maybe a bit of a bruiser, and I got a poke. Yeah, but no, so much more to him than that. And he genuinely was the one who changed that game for them last night, because he was the one kind of offering runs either in behind or even more so to feet and showing and linking up that just wasn't there in the first half.
The four changes thing is interesting, Gav, isn't it? Like, that's mad. Like, that is some turnover at halftime.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that before. I can't think of... So that's obviously Bradley signalling, I'm not happy with this.
Yeah. And I suppose I would have looked at him, David, I don't know if you were the same. I was looking and I was going with three of the four. I was saying, yeah, that's three guys who are probably getting a start tonight because it's the second game in such a short space of time and wouldn't be seen as being in their strongest 11.
Yeah.
But the Gary O'Neill one was the one that that surprised me. And I'm probably Gary O'Neill's biggest advocate, but the problem he's got is, like, Chris McCann. I might have said it to you before. Chris McCann, during my period at Dundalk, when we played Rovers, he was the player who was giving us the most trouble. Like, he's just... His football IQ is absolutely ridiculous. And obviously, he had a brilliant game last time round for them. So I think he's, after pushing himself right back up to the forefront of Bradley's thinking.
Yeah, and Bradley was on O'Neill's back after about 6 or 7 minutes last night, in terms of not getting on the ball, not getting in the right spaces to get the ball. And it's what I went back to saying about, because it's what drew me into properly looking at how Sligo were countering, and it was basically they just stopped him getting on the ball, but they weren't able to stop McCann getting on the ball. And the part that could have been also, it's the second half and bodies are a bit more tired maybe, and they can't cover as much ground or can't do as much work, but it wasn't surprising just by how Bradley was being at the break during the first half about trying to demand more of Gary O'Neill. But that's what I'm saying, like, we're talking about the four changes. Like, they bring on Graham Bourke, Ireland international, Chris McCann, who played in the Premier League and pretty much Championship is the whole level of his career. Rory Gaffney, who's their first choice, obviously striker essentially, and then Andy Lyons, who is an Ireland 21 international. So, like, that's, again, I made the point in the match report for you for the 42. Like, it's just the strength and depth, again, just shows you, like.
And it's helped earn them back top spot at the top of the league. Derry have surrendered it thanks to back-to-back draws against Bowes and now at home to Pats. Quite a turnaround. They absolutely hammered Pats 4-0. It was a scoreline that flattered Pats, I have to say, in Inchicore last Friday week. And now at home, they can only manage a scoreless draw against the same opposition, Shane. Did you see any of this? Is this another Derry wobble?
Yeah, so I'll tell you what piqued my interest on it was the social media reaction, where you had quite a lot of people saying, oh, you know, Derry really struggled tonight and didn't have the same fluidity and, you know, it's been a big blip for them and all this kind of crack. And then you had Dan McDonald, who usually is pretty measured in fairness to him, saying, Derry were absolutely excellent tonight, won't play that well and not score again. If they continue to play like this every week, they'll be right in the hunt. So I'm like, right, there's two completely different narratives here. So my usual stunt, head to Y Scout and let's see what they have to say about it. And as you say, the Derry 4-0 win from 10 days ago, the XG that night was 2.01 for Derry and 0.84 for Pats. So you could say that, you know, round the numbers off there, that should have been a 2-1 win for Derry, even though they won it 4-0. The XG last night was 2.77 for Derry and 0.22 for Pats. That should have been a 3-0 win
right.
for Derry. That should have been a 3-0 win for Derry last night.
So that's that's a real rear guard action from Pats.
It is very much so. And obviously it is a case of the scoreline kind of changing the narrative, because by all accounts, Derry were a hell of a lot better last night against Pats than they were when they played them 10 days ago. But look, one was a comprehensive 4-0 win, the other wasn't. So therefore, in everybody else's eyes, they played very well on one night and not well on the other, where it appears that was nothing but the case, you know.
And one of the things that Tim Clancy has done since that 4-0 loss to Derry is introduce 16-year-old Sam Curtis to the defence. He's born in December 2005, just to make anyone listening feel their age.
After Roy Keane left Man United.
That's correct. Bloody hell.
And he should also not even be in the conversation based on the relative age effect, Gav. December birth, huh?
Oh, right, okay. So this guy really is a kind of a miracle.
Yeah, very much so. But look, he's been talked about for a long time. Anybody in League of Ireland circles will tell you how often his name has popped up over the last kind of 2 years. It was only a matter of time as to when they threw him in, really, I think, you know.
Did he sign a pro deal at the same time as a banquet, or was it, I'm guessing it might have been after?
I'm not sure on that now, to be honest.
Yeah, well, he would have had to be 16, wouldn't he? So it would have been December last year. Okay, so good turnaround for Pats. In the first division, the Bray Cavendishley merger is not going very well. I'm sure many of you have seen this footage of Pat Devlin involved in a fairly ugly confrontation with fans during a 1-1 draw with Wexford, the third from the bottom. Now, Bray have issued a statement saying they remain fully supportive of Devlin. They have condemned the behaviour of a small minority of fans. But they say they are appointing a fan liaison manager, saying that our door is always open for dialogue with fans who wish to make their point. However, this must be conducted in an adult fashion with mutual respect, openness and above all the interests of the club at heart. The door is always open for dialogue, but they posted that on social media and turned off the replies. I don't know if either of you have an opinion on, like, I'm sure you haven't really got to see much of Bray this season, but it's not going very well, is it?
No, it's not going very well. Look, it was uncomfortable to watch, Gav, really, to be honest with you, as, you know, for anybody, not just, I was going to say, as somebody who's been in his shoes of where you do get abuse thrown at you, but for anybody, I'm sure it was an uncomfortable watch. Yeah, look, you just have to grin and bear it, don't you, really? You just have to grin and bear it when the abuse comes. And, you know, Devo is around a long, long time, which made me question, you know, what's been said. Because I'm sure it's not the first time he's been in a tricky situation and had people shouting for his head and calling for him to get out and that. But, look, he has to be a little bit wiser. There's no upside to engaging in it. There's absolutely no upside to engaging in it. You know, you might not want to be seen to let them get away with it or whatever it is or whatever prompted them to react, but it's a no-win situation. And, yeah, look, it's escalating. I thought the statement, the statement is ridiculous. Like, it's so, you know, no problem. Say everything you've said, but just acknowledge the other side of the argument a little bit, maybe to some extent. And I don't think it's done the club any favours.
Have you ever engaged with any stick? Not that obviously you would ever be have been
just on here.
No.
And you would, Gavin, it's not easy. Like, you do have to point your tongue. You see, because the League of Ireland is so small, and everybody gets to know everybody, like, you know, there'd be very few regulars at Galway United that I wouldn't have actually ended up knowing their name or knowing a little bit about them or that kind of thing. So, like, you know, I remember, you know, one or two occasions towards the end where there was a group of, I think it was about three, it was only about three people, but they would, when the final whistle would go, they would rush down out of their seats to get to the side of the tunnel so that they could lean in over the barrier to, and these weren't teenagers now. In Pat Devlin's case, they seem to be quite young, but these people I'm talking about now were definitely late 20s. And they would lean in over it and, you know, fire all sorts of abuse. The usual garden standard abuse, though. You know what I mean? Garden variety abuse. It's, you know, the usual, you don't know what you're doing and get out of the club and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, you do have to bite your tongue. But at the same time, you know, that kind of abuse is fairly easy enough to take. Like, you just, in my opinion, it's easy enough to take. Whereas, you know, if, you know, any sort of abuse aimed at your family or referencing your family or any of that kind of stuff, to me, that would cross a line, you know.
That would be one of the things to be curious about, was to see what, because it did in the video as well. There does seem to be a few kind of older people in it, and mostly kids. But like, I don't know what was actually said or what the level of abuse was, but it does kind of strike me as someone like a manager who should know better, but also because he's been there for so long, maybe feels as if this shouldn't be happening to him, and that's why he reacted the way he did. And it's just a messy situation all around.
Yeah. In the Women's National League big game on Saturday, it's now advantage Shelburne. They've opened up a 5-point lead over Piemont thanks to a 1-0 win at Talca Park on Saturday. Jesse Stapleton's goal settled that one. And there was, Katie McCabe, once of Shelburne, suffered disappointment in the Women's Super League, beaten to the WSL title in England by Chelsea by a single point. Furthering the theme of disappointment for Irish players across the water, Troy Parrott scored the winner against Wickham, but a 1-0 win wasn't enough. Owing to their 2-0 first leg deficit in the League One playoffs. So not even a final now for MK Dons, having come so close to automatic promotion. It's really quite disappointing for them. It sounds like, we don't know what Parrott's next move is. I mean, you'd imagine that had MK Dons gone up to the Championship, maybe he would have stuck with them. Like, he'd be hoping for next season. Look, it looks unlikely that he'll stay at Spurs, but, you know, a Championship alone would probably be best for him.
Yeah, it was a super header, that's for sure. It was kind of another string to his bow that I wasn't aware of. I saw, you know, I'd followed the Spurs Twitter feed, and you'd get a lot of, I would have seen an awful lot of his underage goals for Spurs, but I can't remember too many headers, to be honest with you, so I can't. I thought that was an absolutely brilliant header.
It was interesting because he nearly scored a second in the second half, where he almost bundled his way through rather than shalomed his way through, because he did. He kind of went through and he got a bit of luck, and he just opened his body out and it looked as if he was going to bury it, but then in fairness, the Wickham captain came in with an unbelievable tackle. Absolutely unbelievable tackle to stop it. Disappointing for Troy Parrott, disappointing for Connor Coventry, but not disappointing for that football club. Should not exist and is an absolute disgrace.
Like, I broadly agree with you. And if you asked me a year ago, I would agree with you wholeheartedly. But I don't know. I'm just so fucking blinkered that Connor Coventry and Troy Parrott, even Warren O'Hara, met or seen.
From Cameron.
They get in the team, and I'm like, okay, I wish them nothing but success.
No, it's a vehicle for good in that sense. And it was the same with Stephen Gleeson, who came through, from Dublin, where he played for Ireland. He kind of made a career for himself pretty much at MK after getting released by Wolves. But I just despise that football club and everything it stands for. It's just, that's it, yeah.
We'll move on to the happier stories from across the water over the weekend. Glenn Whelan now has the full sweep. He's been promoted to the Premier League, he's been promoted to the Championship, and now he's promoted to League One in just the most amazing of circumstances. So Bristol Rovers had to win by 5 goals. Had to better Northampton's result by 5 goals to go draw level on goal difference, and then be promoted based on goals scored. Incredibly, so Northampton beat Barrow 3-1. That meant Bristol Rovers had to beat who were they playing? Scunthorpe by 7 goals. And they actually went and did it, winning 7-0.
A complaint hasn't there?
Yeah, so what is it? Northampton have complained about the lineup picked by Scunthorpe that it didn't uphold the integrity of the league.
Like 5 teenagers or something, or 5 18-year-olds. There was a couple of like under 19s in the squad. Apparently, one of the rules is you have to have at least 10 people in the team sheet who played in the last game. So, and they did uphold that. So it wasn't that they just threw a lot of kids in out of nowhere. Like, it's, and yet it's apparently this is how bad they've been all year, which is part of the reason why they've been relegated. But
They haven't broken any rules.
No, don't think so. Not in terms of the actual. Obviously, there's the law, and I suppose there's the spirit. But by all accounts, they've had that. There was no actual. This is where you need to let Ollie Bourne to absolutely make sure of on this. But,
they nearly managed to make a mess of it for themselves anyway, I think, didn't they, with the pitch invasion?
Yeah, well, there was a lengthy delay. I mean, the game didn't kick off again. I mean, all the other games were finished by the time the last, you know, they had another 7 or 8 minutes to play in this game.
Yeah, I was following the Twitter feed on it at the time, and I think like they had to put out an announcement on the Twitter feed that the referee has said that if the pitch is not cleared and if fans do not stay off the pitch, he will abandon the game. Please do not risk our chances of promotion here.
Imagine how Joey Barton would have reacted.
But
he'd knock every one of them off the pitch with his own two fists.
You know who one of the first team coaches is at Bristol, Shane?
Well,
Kevin Bond.
Is it?
Yeah. Because I rang him up for a piece I was doing about something totally different, about Luka Modric, actually, believe it or not, around the Champions League a while ago. And when I sussed that he was actually at Bristol. I was like, oh, geez, Glenn Whelan's there. So I went from talking about Luka Modric to Glenn Whelan, thinking that's an easy segue to make or whatever. But he's full of praise for him in terms of how he conducts himself. And even still, that he's like in training every day, still trains every day, and is like the best player in training in terms of the amount of effort he puts in. What was the quote he gave? Like he trains as if it's the last time he's going to kick a ball or something every single day. So it's just like, to still have that enthusiasm and that just dedication to the game at that age and at that level, considering where he's been at. Like, he's earned his few bob. He could have easily by now said, right, listen, I've had enough. Like, I'm not, why am I playing in League Two when he's kind of the career he's already had? But it just shows you, like, kind of. And he started the game as well. He kind of lost his place as well, didn't he? He had lost his place in the team and was kind of even was more of a squad player for the last couple of months. But he, fair play to him. Just, I know, listen, he's maligned and a lot of people say he kind of give him stick and all, but to make the career he's had for himself and to the longevity, he just deserves nothing but respect.
Ah, he's had and continues to have an outstanding career. And Joey Barton wants him to stick around for the League One season next season. So we'll see if that does happen. Like, he and Barton played, and it must have been the Man City youth ranks together.
They used to kick rooms like each other in training. Like, they literally would battle each other in training. I remember Willow Flood was telling me that for a piece of it for 42 when I did a piece about the, because there was a few of them. There was like there was Willow Flood, Glenn Whelan. He's managed to have a petty filial, which he hasn't got sick thrown up yet, which is actually which is promising. But there was a few Irish lads at City together. Paddy McCarthy, who's now the under-23 manager at Crystal Palace, he was actually the captain of that youth team. And Stephen Elliott as well. Barton, who was released by Everton as a 15-year-old and then came in, and like, just that whole youth team is just incredible by all accounts.
Yeah, incredible stuff from Bristol Rovers. Trevor Clark started that game as well, once with Shamrock Rovers as well. Just further up in the Championship, James Brown made his debut for Blackburn Rovers on the final day of the season. There's plenty of uncertainty now at Blackburn as Tony Mowbray leaves, but Daryl Lennon is also expected to leave because he's out of contract, which is incredible that the club have allowed the club captain to run down his contract like that. But good end to the season for James Brown, at least. And also in the Championship, Jason Malumbi is signed permanently for West Brom. Chance, David, now, I think, for Malumbi to set down some roots and put some momentum behind his career.
Yeah, I got some really good information about Malumbi a day after I wrote an article that I wanted to use the information about him in for the 42, which is always one of the joys. Yeah, that is it. I was just setting down roots now a little bit and not having a couple of loans. Even though we got games in, I say, Millwall and... we didn't really play much at Preston. He kind of didn't really work out from there. But it's just a chance for him to... Because you would imagine now West Brom, even with Steve Bruce, will be... Because if they fell apart, really, in the league last year, after Slaven Bilic left, they just need to put promotion charge in place. But for Malumbi, it's just about playing games consistently, but also delivering consistent performances. Because speaking to people there, it's like, you know what you'll get in terms of, say, energy, but it's just times where it just doesn't work for him in games. Like, he's had a couple of really impressive ones, but then a couple of other games where he's been lucky to stay in the team after. But what's kind of caught the eye with people around the club, even there, was just his total dedication to it. Like, literally having to be told, listen, just go home, leave the training ground, get out of the gym. Like, I think part of that is the fact that I think his girlfriend is still down in the south of England because she's doing a degree and stuff, but he's just caught the eye, not just with that on the pitch, but also just what he's doing around the place and the attitude he has around the place, which Shane will know as well. That's 99% of the job, is if you're going to have that career. We spoke with Glenn Whelan, is just maintaining that kind of standard for yourself and having that kind of dedication to the cause, because there's just so many players. Like you see it now, and like at this time of year when there's players getting released and clubs announcing the release players, and you mentioned there, but even Lenihan and stuff, like, it's just a reminder, like, it's such a churn. Like you really need so much to go for it to even just have a career.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, like if you're borderline, like if you know, there's the players a manager will definitely want to retain, there's the players a manager definitely won't want to retain, and then there's that group in the middle where you've got to make decisions on. And inevitably, like, the decisions on those players are going to come down to attitude, because if you're 50-50 on a guy and he's a bit of a pain in the hole as well, or, you know, he aggravates you in some way or other, well, then, you know, it's easy enough, let's let him off. Whereas if he's 100% or like Malumbi seems to be, well, then you're willing to give the extra time and put the extra patience to try and get things right with him. And like, it's a 3-year contract, I think, Gav, isn't he? He's there now till 2025. Like, that's excellent for him.
Yeah, it's a good opportunity for him. And okay, it's the Championship, but it is a big club. He won't be allowed to commute from the south of England, though. I don't know if you saw Steve Bruce's comments about not living close to the training ground. He was complaining that too many players are travelling too far, so he wants everyone living within an hour of the training ground from now on. Says that much travel is bad for team morale, and it sitting in a car for
can't
that long
good, yeah.
can
be good you know, for the back. You
yeah,
know.
It can't be.
But
good
that was
for,
something
for,
that
yeah,
that was something
but,
that Malumbi didn't do. He did move close. He got an apartment near the training ground.
Yeah,
what you call it and stuff. So,
that's interesting. Bruce, by the way, did head off the natural questioner. It was just like, well, what about you? Are you going to move? Bruce is like, I know what you're going to ask now. Like, I mean, am I going to move? And he said, no, it's different for managers. We sign a contract, no one, we're going to get sacked at some point.
He's so mad, isn't he?
I don't know if Steve Bruce is asserting the kind of authority that he thinks he is by saying, like, you all have to move here and you have to, like, it's my word or the highway. And then, but I'm going
to
be sacked.
That's up
here
there
anyway,
with Roy Hodgson so. Saying the Watford fans were too far away from him to acknowledge after he got them relegated.
God, have you ever seen anyone? I've never seen anyone so convinced Watford would be relegated from the Premier League than their own manager. He gave up on it weeks ago. He was literally, there was a match today interview when he literally laughed at the prospect of staying up. Yeah. Anyway, that's a tangent. Dara O'Shea, by the way, David, I know you wanted to mention him. He will be alongside Jason Malumbi at West Brom again next season.
Yeah, it's an interesting one as well. Part of the reason why, because it was something that was said about the start of a big season for him next year. Like, everything was going pretty smoothly for him, and he has got back into the team after that bad injury. But it was just something that was mentioned that it's looked upon within the club for him that it's a big year, because it was almost seen as if he was Slaven Bilic's boy a little bit in terms of coming through. Like, Bilic absolutely loved him. He was the one who gave him the chance. And Bruce does see a lot in him. Bruce thinks he's a future captain. That's where, in terms of, and you never know, depending on what happens in the summer with the club, like, Bruce does really rate him. So it would be a big year for him.
The beautiful story, Wes Hoolan in Cambridge is all over. Wes has left the club. Is that it? Or, I mean, there were reports, certainly before the League of Ireland season began, that Duff wanted Wes back at Chelsea. I mean, he's a free agent now. Could it happen?
I would be amazed if inquiries aren't been made. Like, surely that has to be a conversation that's been had there. Like, I'd love to see it. It'd be amazing. It would be amazing. It really, really would be amazing. I mean, it was brilliant to see the way he's after been, you know, been talked about in Cambridge. The best player they've had in what did they say, the best player they've had in the last 30 or 40 years and this kind of stuff. And like that style of play that he has where it's all upstairs with him anyway. Like he's bloody 6 months younger than I am. Like the thoughts of, you know, like, my God, the thoughts of being able to do what he's doing. I'd give anything. I'd absolutely love to. But it'd be amazing. And, you know, we were talking recently about League of Ireland attendances going up. I mean, there's no more surefire way to keep them going in the right direction than to bring Wes back to the league. Like, it would be terrific. And I would think, I suppose it's all going to depend on his family situation, isn't it? Like, if he's, I don't know, is he intending spending, you know, is he intending coming back to Ireland now? Or is he intending to continue to live in England? If he's going to live in England, well, then it's probably a dead duck. But if he's going to come back, then it absolutely has to happen. And I think, League of Ireland level, I think you'd definitely at least get another season. He's another big yoga convert, you know. He's another one of these that's putting the longevity down to doing a huge amount of yoga and all that kind of stuff. But I'd love to see him around the place for let's get the second half of this season and maybe all the next season out of him.
He'd just be like playing at League of Ireland level. He would be more than comfortable at it. Like, I think he would probably be one of the best players in the league, wouldn't he?
I think so, yeah. I think so. I know we had luck, we didn't get the most out of the likes of Duffer himself, I suppose, and that when he came back, and there has been a few like that. But I just think Wes Hoolihan's style of play, I think he'd be fine. Just get a bit of legs around him and just let him do his magic.
David, I don't know, you have your ear to the ground on many of these things. There were those reports before the season started that he might be coming back to Shells. Has there been any further?
Well, if the last couple of weeks with stuff starting to go, boy, I'll probably find out about an hour after it happens. that's just how things are going for me at the moment. But on it, watch it, the point Shane made is right, though. I think originally his plan would have been to come home, but then you speak to people, and he is very settled around Norfolk, isn't it? Where he will obviously settle really at Norwich, and that's where I think his family are based. His minutes are managed very well as well when at Cambridge. Like, the move did come very close to Shelbourne before during the winter. And it was put to me that I don't think people were too happy that it got leaked a little bit before it got further along, and that maybe upset things a little bit. Like, it would be great to see him back, just because he's the sort of player who you would just see some great stuff from him. But also, if he was to go back to, say, Shelbourne, someone like Jack Moylan could actually just benefit so much from it, who is a player who's obviously looking well, who's developing, got his first Premier Division goal, but would... sorry, I'm just distracted.
You're grand. Let's move on. Let's talk to... incredibly, let's talk to one of Wes's former teammates at Shelbourne. Jim Crawford is now, of course, in charge of the Irish under-21s. His side have a really, really good shot at making at least a playoff for the qualification for next year's European Championships. They're currently third in the group. They have a game in hand and second place Sweden, whom they trail by a point. And they're 4 points behind Italy, whom they play on the final day. Italy are, of course, the group leaders. Prior to that game, away to Italy on the final day of the group, Ireland have home games against Montenegro on 6th of June and Bosnia, which is before that, on the 3rd of June. Those games are at Tallaght Stadium. Tickets for those games are available at Ticketmaster now. So ahead of those games, look forward to it all. I took a trip to Abbottstown to sit down with Jim Crawford. So let's take a listen. Jim Crawford, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me.
How's preparations going?
Yeah, preparations have been going very well. We've got three huge games coming up in the June window. So we've done all our sort of analysis on Bosnia, Montenegro and Italy. And, you know, we've come up with a game plan that we now need to sort of, see what way we're going to break up the training sessions to prepare and to give us the best chance of winning. You know, we understand their strengths and weaknesses of the three teams and their key players. So, you know, that's the real challenge as a head coach is to get that sort of on paper first and then implement it on the grass. So, yeah, in that respect, it's going very well. But, you know, June has always been a challenge of a window, and that's why last year we organised three games against three quality teams, Denmark, Switzerland and the Australian under-23s team, because we knew that this window was coming up 12 months later, and to get players with some sort of experience of playing three games in a window, you know, and the disadvantage of the June window for our players, the UK players, is that a lot of them, you know, their seasons have finished at the end of April, early May. Some of them have been involved in the playoffs that they just finished the other day. So there's that gap that needs to be addressed, where you got to get the balance right, i.e. Rest and start, working on an individual program that we've worked in consultation with the clubs. Our own strength and conditioning coach, Owen Clarkin, has seen to that. And, you know, the players need to do that, because in order for us to get into the playoffs or to qualify automatically, you know, we need to be fit, we need to be at it, and you know, it's something that we need to get across to the players, how important it is that they follow these programs.
That's a big challenge, the three game window, and then like that is a big gap, like at the end of April, and there, I guess there'll be a level of rest and tapering off, and then to taper back up for a relatively, you know, in the relative to the summer, a relatively short window before they take their holidays again. That's a challenge.
It is a huge challenge, and what makes it even bigger is that, you know, the leagues in Bosnia and Montenegro finish on the 28th of May. So this window sits nicely for them that, you know, they'll finish the last games on the 28th of May, and then they'll play against ourselves, whether it's the 3rd or the 6th of June. So, you know, it's nice for them, but for us, it's a big challenge. But, you know, I think the level of players, the level of professionalism of the players, I think they'll deliver on the individual programs that they were given, albeit in trying circumstances because they're by themselves. You know, some of them might meet up with somebody else and do the program, but it is a test for the players. But look, as I said, they're good professionals and they know the importance of the window that's coming up.
Yeah. How are you enjoying life as an under-21s manager? Was there ever a likelihood that you would join Keith and Stephen in stepping up, or was this job, when Stephen was stepping up, was this job always earmarked for you?
No, I don't know. I met Stephen at Stephen's house when everything started to change, and you know, Stephen says to me about would I like to take over the 21s, and I said I'd love to, you know. So what I am is an extended part of the senior staff, and anyway, you know, okay, I didn't go up with the 21s team, and you know, Stephen brought in his own staff, which is fair enough. But I have to say, you know, since that moment, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, it's been a huge challenge, you know, through situations such as COVID, you know, you're losing players and what have you, but it's been fantastic. And I think what makes it easier is getting the right staff in, and that's certainly something that I did do, because the team behind the team is important with regards to creating the right environment for the players. I think if you ask any of the players from 1 to 24 or 26 how many we bring in, they'll all say that they love coming in, putting on the green shirt and being involved in the camp, because it's important that's the environment you create, that they love coming in, they love training, they love being part of the 21 setup, which is hugely important, you know. So, no, I've enjoyed it. Each window is a huge challenge. Whether, you know, October we were, or November we were up against Italy and Sweden, which was great that we got 3 points, and then the last window was a fantastic performance, albeit more defensive than anything else. But to come away from Sweden at any level and win 2-0 was fantastic, and it just shows the quality of players that we have.
Yeah, among the challenges is the fact that many of your best and most experienced players have been plucked for the senior team. Here's the list. Tell me if I'm missing anyone. Gavin Bazunu, Troy Parrott, Andrew Omobamadele, Jason Knight, Aaron Connolly, Adam Eda, Nathan Collins, and Michael Obafemi has been capped at senior level before. I mean, to qualify or to get to the playoffs even with an under-21 squad without that group of players makes, like, it would be an amazing achievement.
It'd be an amazing achievement. It really would. And a lot of talk has been about, you know, what if you had those players on board? But, you know, the way we look at it is that this group of players have got us into this situation now where it's in our own hands at the minute. And it just shows, you know, the quality of players that we do have. And, okay, the players that you named there have gone up to the senior team, and we're all, you know, very proud of them. To work with them, you know, they're great people, first and foremost, you know, and they deserve all this success that you get with regards to going up to the senior team. But that leaves an opportunity for other players, and there's no doubt about it that the group of players that have been brought in since we played Wales back in I think it was the September window. This group have been fantastic. There's been a few casualties on the way where a couple of players have come in and things unfortunately haven't happened for them at club level, because that becomes our barometer, how they're doing at club level, you know, gives us an idea of can they step up to international football. So, you know, it's been a fantastic achievement up till now for the players, but, you know, I don't think it'll stop there. I think if the lads are fit and at it, there's no doubt about it, we can put on a good show in Tala against Bosnia and Montenegro. And then we see what happens after that. It might be we're going to Italy to win the group, you know, which would be really exciting, where winner takes all in Italy.
Are you worried about losing more to the senior setup ahead of these games in June? I think Conor Coventry may be the most likely, given the season he's had.
Look, it could be anybody, and I'm always open to it, and that's the job that I have with the 21s, is that at any given time, Stephen could say, look, we want this player or that player, and you know, the senior team is the biggest show in town, so you have to be open to that, and it's certainly something I am. I'd never go behind the doors and keep anything secret from Stephen. If somebody's playing well, and I've been at a game, I'd say to Stephen, I'd say, look, this player's doing really well. Keep an eye on him, and I'm sure he'd.
And you never, for you're never tempted just to, okay, I'll bite my tongue to make sure I have him for.
No, because I think no matter what position you are in life, whether it's a coach or whatever, you have to have your why or your real passion of doing something. And for me, you know, I get a big thrill out of seeing players progressing, whether it's in 19s, you know, like Ollie O'Neill, Evan Ferguson from the 19s into the 21s, or from the 21s into the senior team. And I think that, I get a real buzz from it, but it also does add to my situation of, okay, Jim, they've gone up now, you've got to search and try to get replacements for those players, you know, and that's the challenge. And you know, the technical staff understand the challenges. You know, John O'Shea, Alan Reynolds, Rene Gilmartin, Martin Doyle. We all know the challenges that if somebody goes up, they need to be replaced.
Mm. What's success then for an under-21 manager? Like, what's your primary metric against which you're measured by? Is it qualification or is it players stepping up to senior?
I think it's double-pronged. Certainly where, you know, if you promote 2, 3, 4 players up to the senior team, I think that's unbelievable, you know, to do that. But also qualifying for tournaments is equally important. Why? Because players need to be challenged at that level, at European competition, where you're playing against the best players. And I've no doubt about it that if we do get into the European finals and playing against top European teams, that, you know, the level of development that will happen for the players who are involved would be fantastic, you know. And sometimes you see it when a player comes home from, or goes back to their club from, an international window. You know, for example, Meepo, who went back to Doncaster in the last window, you know, he's come back and he's on a crest of a wave. He scored a couple of goals for Doncaster, and that's only, you know, one story. That there's so many different stories where players come back from an international window, and I've no doubt about it that if we got to the European finals, we'd see a lot of that.
If you got to European finals, would you be tempted to raid the seniors for those guys who have been established at senior level and are still under 21, or would it be a case of sticking with
I think
have got you there?
No, look, right now all I can say is that the players that got us there would be the ones that you'd have to reward, because I've seen their hard work, the graft that they put in when they come into camp, and the hard work that they deliver day in, day out with their clubs, you know, because we're relying on clubs to be working with these players as well to keep them up to speed. And I think that'd be their reward, is, you know, to playing in a major European finals for the first time at under 21's level would be a fantastic prize with all the hard work that they've...
You've alluded to it there slightly, but can you give us an insight into the kind of work that you do with players outside of windows? Because it is very much a full-time job.
Yeah, it's, you know, having regular contact with the players, whether it's Zoom, whether it's phone calls, you know, you'd be talking about their club game, their club performance, what did they think of the performance. But you have to be careful too that, you know, they're probably playing at a club that has them playing a certain way that you don't want to sort of have a conflict of interest where I'm saying to them, why are you doing this or why are you doing that? So I like them to tell me about their own performance. And, you know, if they're not in the team, you know, I've said it so many times that, you know, go and communicate with the manager, you know, go and talk to him and say, what do I need to do to get into the first team, you know? So it's, you know, a lot of communicating with the players, a lot of, you know, asking them questions, a lot of getting over to the UK and watching them play. Because as I said already, that's your barometer as the head coach is, you know, how are they playing at club level, you know? And, you know, fortunately, we have a lot of players involved in the squad that are over here in Ireland as well. So you can, you know, just get in the car and go down and watch them play, whether it's, you know, Shamrock Rovers, Bohemians or whoever, you know. So it's, you know, then the other side of it is you've got the likes of Conor Noss, you know, who's playing over in Germany. So you're looking at his games on Wise Scout. You're keeping in touch with Conor. It's ongoing. You know, you're sort of nearly talking to 30-odd players, you know, so and trying to help them develop as players via whether it's Zoom conversations or otherwise.
We had Georgie Kelly on this podcast last week, and he was really interesting on how dressing rooms are changing and how the game is changing a little bit, where it's more sympathetic or more open to players who want to be more open and be more vulnerable. And I'm interested to get your insight into how you communicate with players, and do you deal with them differently than how, say, you were dealt with or your teammates were dealt with back when you were a player?
Yeah, well, certainly, yeah. Like, I think it's, you know, the players that we're dealing with now are Generation Zs, you know what I mean? So I've done a little bit of research into, you know, a typical characteristic of these players, and, you know, they like...
What kind of research?
Oh, just... via the internet, you know what I mean?
Just so, in terms of what are the kids watching these days kind of thing? Or
No. What sort of motivates them? And it's all sort of, you know, IT, you know, whether it's sharp messages. So, you know, for example, if we're talking about set pieces, we'd send them set pieces via WhatsApp, you know what I mean? Because nice. They're all sort of glued to their phones nowadays. The Generation Zs enjoy sort of a little bit of autonomy where you'll ask them questions, or, you know, let's say we'd show them sort of a movie reel of Bosnia, saying, okay, what do you think of Bosnia? They'll give us their strengths and weaknesses, and we'll come together with some sort of plan of how we'll train and how we could break them down. So it's definitely an inclusive environment, as opposed to when I was growing up, yeah. You were told what to do as a player.
That's very interesting. So there will always be an element of your game plan that has actually been formulated by the players themselves, if you're responding
in that way. Yeah, without a doubt. And for example, we send individual clips to our players. So for example, Mark McGuinness, and we'd send him the number of centre forwards that he might come up against, let's say for Bosnia, you know. So he would view these on his WhatsApp, and then we'd have unit meetings where Mark would come up in front of, you know, the defensive unit, and he'd talk about the strengths and weaknesses of that, but of those particular players that were sent to him by WhatsApp, you know. So they're all learning from each other, and they're challenging each other, you know, as well, you know what I mean? So they're not just sat there listening to him, that somebody might throw up, well, I thought he was, his movement to the front post was very effective, where he'd drop a shoulder to try to get in behind you to come across you at the last minute, you know. So, you know, there's all these conversations going on with the players that it's player led, as opposed to the head coach up there pointing.
And it also probably helps with leadership on the field, because if the players are taking a role in devising the game plan from, you know, outside a camp, they would help bring it on and into the game.
Yes.
And yeah. I kind of, maybe this is too far a leap, but when you see Manchester City really like not react in the Champions League, like what it's often attributed to is, you know, Pep Guardiola has such like a minute control of the game plan, and you know, when there's something goes wrong in the machine, the players aren't empowered, or the players can't react on the pitch in that moment. Maybe yeah. that's a completely wrong of me to yeah. regurgitate those takes I've read
yeah.
elsewhere.
Yeah.
But like the way that you're talking and giving players a role in, you know, helping devise the game plan, probably mitigates against that, because they've been given the input into yeah. the game plan in the first place.
Yeah, yeah, without a doubt, and that's what it's about. And it's like, I suppose, you know, being, you know, head coach, it's about getting the right staff and the staff buy into the process. And it's like any business, that, you know, you're getting results through people. And how you do that is, you know, you give them a little bit too, you know, of autonomy and have their say. And look, you know, some of them could be miles off it, and it's about, you know, the staff and myself steering them back in the right direction too, you know. So, but up till now, you know, the players have been fantastic with it. You know, we send them out, as I said, a movie reel of our opposition, and they're clever. They really are. You know, some of the stuff that they come up with during the team meetings is excellent, you know.
Yeah, so that sounds like a great position for a coach to be in. What do you find is your biggest challenge in the role?
Biggest challenge in the role would be, you know, not having them as much as you'd like. You know, there's, you know, you'd like to have, you know, the players in more windows, but that's not going to happen. So you just have to get on with it. But you have to remember, you've got players coming in from perhaps 14, 15 different clubs, you know, into one building or into one training session. And each of those clubs have different philosophies and different ways of playing. So then you're trying to get some sort of order with the players and you know, you're regurgitating your principles every time they come in. So that's a challenge, you know, and again, it's something that we're all aware of as a staff, that, you know, we, whatever conversations we have with the players in between windows, we're trying to let them know with regards the way we want to play, and when we are talking to players about their performance, let's say, whether it's Gavin Kilkenny with Bournemouth and what have you, without being too sort of intrusive in terms of the way Bournemouth want to play, you'd ask a question, were you happy with that, Gav? And, you know, Gav would go, yeah, brilliant. I said, yeah, that's exactly what we're looking for with the 21s, you know, can you open up and change the game when things get tight on one side of the pitch, you know? So it's a challenge, but it's a challenge that I enjoy. You know what I mean? And, you know, you've got different challenges where last minute somebody gets injured, you know, and you get that call to say, look, such and such can't make it. He's torn his hamstring, and you just have to adjust, you know, and, you know, there's been times where, you know, we've had key players missing, you know, and it changes our whole sort of tactics with regards to the opposition coming up, you know what I mean, that you're missing key players. But look, that's the joys of working with the 21s.
How do you create an environment in which they really want to come into? Because I know, like, previous Irish teams going back 20, 30 years, we know how they did it. It was put money behind a bar.
Well, look, with the 21s, there's no doubt about it. You know, I could say that if you ask, you know, any of the 24, 26 players who are selected, they'll all say that they love coming in. And what's the reason behind that? Is they come and they enjoy it. It's, you know, going back to their own characteristics, they like to be involved, whether it's in the team tactics, whether it's the set pieces, they're all involved in it. They have fun. They're actually a good group of players too that enjoy each other's company. And that's important. But you got to get the balance right, that it's not all team meetings, that it's all not all tactics, that you have to give a little bit for them too, you know what I mean, whether it's a little five-a-side competition, But you as a head coach, you've got to say, okay, what's the most important thing we get out of this training session? That what is our main objective? Is it, you know, our defensive shape? And once you're happy with that, then, you know, then you might sprinkle in a little five-a-side competition that that the players enjoy. And you know, we have activities which are very important, whether it's quizzes or what have you. And, you know, that, you know, I know people might think quizzes are boring and what have you, but Rene Gilmartin would be our chief entertainment guy, and he's the one who comes up with some really good stuff that the players enjoy. And I do get great crack out of just sitting in the back of it, listening to the lads laugh and joking and having great fun. And that's hugely important. But as well as that, when you're having those individual conversations with the players, whether it's walking down the corridor or the hotel, it's letting them know how privileged they are to be representing their country, you know, playing for Ireland, that they're part of a minority that's in a fantastic position to perhaps go and make history here with the 21s, you know, and I think they enjoy all that, you know.
I'm not sure how we are for time. Adam's watching the clock for us, but you have brought in your laptop, so I am interested if you do want to run through anything with us that we'll do our best and to convert it into audio friendly content. Can we go?
It's funny, yeah. No, I brought this in just in case, but certainly how we'd work things is we'd say, okay, here's our finishing point. Believe it or not, this is the way we want to sort of against Sweden opportunities of playing out. So we'd be telling them, right, the importance of if we do go direct to a centre forward, we need bodies and support in this area of the pitch, but certainly security in behind the ball. What we're looking to do, can we get the ball out wide? We want opposite wide players getting in the box. We want sort of in open play. We want to create overloads in central areas with, you know, certain wide players coming in here. So what we're doing really on day one is, okay, here's the finished product. And then from that, we start piecing it together. The training session later on might be a little bit on build up, might be a bit on middle towards stuff, then final towards stuff, and then piecing it together in 11v11. So it's sort of nearly like a jigsaw, but this could be our first meeting where this is the way we're going to play against Sweden.
You begin at the start of the week. You've listened to the players and how best to approach it. You've obviously watched hours and hours of tapes at the tape of the opposition.
Yeah.
And then you figure out, well, what are the best patterns of attack here through which we can score? Yeah. And then
together as a group.
As a group,
And then we piece together this, where this is shown to the players.
And
now
you start, so you, like, the end point is at the start of the week. This is what we're looking for. And exactly. Then we're going to build toward it. That's
and are we, what do we think of this? You know what I mean? And look, somebody might challenge it going, well, you know, why are we going to do this? Can we try this? So you have a conversation around it.
And do you have 19, 20, 21-year-olds from the floor challenging that?
Yeah. They're leaders.
I think that's testament to the modern player. I mean, that this is what is often derided by angry pundits on television. But I'm not sure if the modern player would have been like that 20 years ago. You're used to the manager. The manager is what the manager says goes, and they're not. You know, it's just not the done thing in the culture, in the environment, to question.
No,
what the manager is doing.
I just have a piece here now that.
Jim's asked us to split into units, looking to the players we're playing against, get a better understanding of them. So we go into the game with clear heads, knowing exactly what our roles are. So we looked at the strengths, weaknesses, left foot, right foot, just things that help us during the game to sort of nullify their strengths and try and get the best advantage we can. Yeah, I think it's more engaging for the players. I think it gives us more responsibility and it gives players the opportunity to do their own research and not listen to things they don't want to listen to. You know, they're getting their own information on board.
Again, he played a lot last year. Three of these played the game against Belgium. The three that are available to play on Friday, Spence, Taylor and Sterk.
Yeah, he's made a couple of appearances for Leeds, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Okay, you go through a slip.
Looks quite quick, quite nippy.
What great. Here's his first clip. Gets tight. Like lots of the Leeds players, obviously, they're doing man for man a lot of the time, so he'll have to get used to a different formation when he comes down and plays at Wales.
So that's an example of, you know, the team breaking up into units where you got John and Alan leading it, the discussions, you know what I mean? And as you heard from Mark McGuinness, it's something that's, you know, hugely fruitful in terms of him getting a better idea of the opponents he's up against.
Mm. Are they getting this level of coaching and the level of involvement in coaching and game plan design, etc., at club level?
I don't know. Look, it's certainly something I don't delve too much into. I know there is managers out there talking to certain players that are, you know, very similar in their way of thinking, and there's also the old school managers that, you know, and you know, they'll stand up at the top of a meeting room and they'll give the information that you need to take on board as a player, because look, you know, there's different objectives with different clubs. Certainly, yeah, we want performance, but there's also that double-pronged approach, as I said, you know, development, that can we develop these players to reach their potential that hopefully will go on with the senior team, or if not, that they still go on and have fantastic careers as a footballer.
And then there is like the manager's meeting then at the FAI when, you know, the senior manager and all the underage managers get together, and I assume feedback, stuff like this.
Yeah, we do. I think they're hugely beneficial, you know, to have the senior Irish international manager in the room as well, talking about what plans they had against various oppositions. But as well as that, it's a game of football, and there is, you know, whether it's Jason Donoghue with the 15s or Stephen Kenny with the senior team, you know, there's all sorts of tactical issues or even issues with your squad that we sit down and discuss, you know, and everything is a huge help for us to put in our toolbox as a head coach going forward into the next camp, you know. So it's and it's important that as a group of head coaches that, you know, our principles are in line, and that we're all sort of repeating the same messages from 15s all the way up to the senior team.
And the link between especially 21s and senior is so important, because I've heard Stephen talk quite, and he sounded quite baffled as he said it in the past, that, you know, Matt Doherty had to wait 3 or 4 years for his senior debut after finishing at 21s. John Egan was the same. And this is, I think they were in a 21s team that got to, oh, they're in a 19s team maybe that got to a semi-final under Paul Doolan.
Yeah.
So that link is quite important, and somewhere where Ireland have probably been falling behind in recent years.
Yeah, look, Stephen's certainly, you know, gone a whole different approach with regards bringing up young players, and you know, he's changed a lot of people's thinking with it, you know, and there's a knock-on effect, because we've played a 16-year-old in this campaign as well, you know, Evan Ferguson, you know, so it does have that effect. We'd Andy Morning in, as I said, Ollie O'Neill we brought up from the 19s, and then Tom had to do the same with some of Colin O'Brien's players. So, you know, there is a knock-on effect, but I think it's very healthy, you know, as long as the player can adapt and has got the ability, which no doubt about it, the players that Stephen brought up has. You see Wales doing it, you know, if you look at Wales international team, they promoted a lot of young players too. So
I was going to ask, are there any inspirations for, or like any other national teams and setups from senior, like, and how they link with the 21s that you're inspired by, both in terms of working with under 21 and senior team, and even then, you know, your style of coaching that you've described in the last 20 minutes or so?
No, not really. I'm just, look, for me, I know that my role here is to sort of, you know, obviously, as I said already earlier on, that you want to qualify to challenge the players, put them into pressurized situations, whether it's a playoff or, you know, we go to Italy in the last game, and you know, the players would gain loads from that, and, you know, ultimately get into the European finals, which would be a real springboard for their young careers. And, you know, the relationship between the senior team and the 21s is that, you know, Stephen would tap in to myself about high potentials. And I'm sure that goes on with every other nation, you know, where, you know, anybody that's pulling up trees with the 21s, you know, is going to make a step up. And we've seen it already, you know, in our own group with Sweden, where Elanga started to break into Manchester United's team. And we sort of had a strong feeling that he wouldn't be playing against us in Sweden, you know. So it does go on. But, you know, certainly you look at 7 or 8 players that you named earlier on that are still eligible to play with the 21s, I think is phenomenal. And I don't think there's any sort of country in the world has done that, but it shows how brave Stephen and the staff were to do that. And they've all settled in really well. They really have. And for me, it makes it a little bit easier for us to use that as a dangling carrot for our players in the group now, that look at the pathway that these players have had. It could be used. So, you know, keep working hard at your game. You know, keep asking questions. Keep demanding the most from yourself. Keep demanding the most from your coaches, whether it's the UK or here.
And we'll finish up in a couple of minutes. I realise I've probably gone way over time. But in terms of the dangling the carrot, does that help? Because there will always be an element of the job that is recruiting is maybe a slightly loaded phrase, but capping players who were not born in Ireland and who are eligible to play elsewhere, and we, you know, the Rice and Grealish thing is well trod ground at this point. But is it easier for you when you have a player who can play for Ireland but is also coveted by other nations for whom they're eligible? Is it easier for you to convince them to play for Ireland when you look at all the players that have played at senior level?
Yeah, it's a great starting point. You know, it's a great starting point when, you know, you can talk to a player who's, you know, he's thinking about whether it's Ireland or another country, and then you show them the pathway that's here. And you can't be dealing with facts. And, you know, the fact is there's young players in that Irish senior team, which shows for me you've got a manager with senior team who's not afraid to play young players if they're good enough, which is, it's refreshing. And it's certainly has turned heads with players, and it's made it easier when you're talking to players, you know, that, yeah, okay, I'll...
Are there any specific examples you want to give?
There is examples, but yeah. I don't want to give them, you know what I mean, because it wouldn't be fair on the player, but it has made it easier with discussions with these players, and they have come on board with us, you know, so... And that, you know, is on the back of what's been happening already with the senior team, you know, bringing up young players and giving them an opportunity at senior level.
Another carrot to dangle in front of them is the possibility of a European Championship next summer. So we wish you very best of luck, and thanks a million for joining us, Jim.
Thanks a million, and it was a pleasure.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks a million. Thanks to Jim. Thanks to Shane and David for joining us earlier on. Thanks to you very much for listening. We're going to be back with another episode of the Football Family next week. Until then, take it easy.